let's get started, and Sajib can first update us on what he's been doing.
So rest of the for the last week, I was focusing mainly on the submodeling stuff we have talked about last meeting. So I summarized some of the results I shared with you on last week. So those are basically the highlights of my findings, especially in terms of average accuracy. So what I did basically is I took two approaches in submodeling. In few of the benchmarks, what I did is that I focused on the regions where the average errors were higher. I mean, I found that in case of Ruby's benchmark, because in those low output regions, there are high concentration of errors. So what I did is that I figured out, okay, I just separated those points and did a training on those points separately, and for the rest of the points I did a separate model, and then I filtered my the testing data points accordingly and checked the average errors across that. So what I found is that even in lower output regions, I found really good accuracy when you just separate out those points. I mean, you do the separate modeling on the lower output region, you don't need to think about a separate, or you don't need to think about discarding those points. I mean, you can, if you just do a separate modeling on those low output regions, you can still get good accuracy even with those low numbers.
Okay, so that's one of the things.
One of the approach, and another approach I found that some of the benchmarks there is no specific trend. The error doesn't appear in a trend or on an output. There is no concentration of error in a specific region. So in those cases, what I did is that I just chopped the input parameter space into separate subspaces and do training on each of those regions separately, and accordingly I filtered my testing points based on the input parameters, and I do the testing of average errors. In both the cases, I found really good accuracy. I think it's better than a global accuracy numbers.
So about the second thing, approach with when you create some model by dividing the input parameter space, do you divide the input parameter space in some intelligent way or arbitrarily?
Yes, I do some intelligent way, because in this specific case, the two controllable input parameters are CPU and memory specifically. Okay, so what I did is that for each benchmark, there is always a parameter which is more important to that benchmark. I mean, you can find those correlation coefficients, calculate those things, and or just by observing the trend of the benchmark, if you plot it, you can find out, okay, this parameter is more dependent on CPU than memory. In case of file bench, there is no dependence of memory. So it doesn't make any sense to chop the memory space into subregions. So what I did is just I chopped the CPU space into separate subregions.
Mm-hmm. How do you position that space?
Just some number. Let's say I vary the input parameter from 100 gigahertz to 1500 gigahertz, 1500 megahertz. So I just chop it, let's say 400, something like that.
Position arbitrarily.
Sajib, is there a way to do it in some automated manner where somebody doesn't have to manually decide? It's like, can we do it based on the output? We look at the output and then we try to break the output into different clusters or something.
That's also another approach I was talking. So what an administrator needs to do, I mean, I don't know if a complete automation is possible, but what an administrator needs to do is that he needs to somehow plot a relation between the output and the input parameter, let's say for CPU and memory. And he can find out, okay, what are the breakpoints in the graph. If the graph is completely uniform, you can just chop it into very different, it's just a complete linear graph, you can just arbitrarily chop it up. But if it's a stepwise graph, you need to find out those breakpoints and do the submodeling on those pieces where the linearity is observed or a specific function is observed.
But do these breakpoints one can find by doing some sort of clustering algorithm on the output. Won't that help?
I think that can be done, yeah.
So I guess the point is, can we automate this entire process of finding out which submodels to create? Right, how to partition this parameter space? I think that would be useful. Because ideally you don't want the human making decisions as they seem like very important decisions,
mm-hmm.
where it is that you want to break the input parameter space.
Mm-hmm.
If there is a more robust way to automate this, then we have a stronger contribution.
Yeah, I was talking about that.
So one thing which you mentioned was to observe, to calculate the correlation coefficients for the output parameter with each of the input parameters.
Yes.
And then you know at least which parameter perhaps is more important and you want to prioritize
that parameter.
That parameter to create partitions. And then the next step is to how exactly to create that partition, and even that could possibly be automated. So think about those questions and try it out. You know, come up with a strategy, apply it to a few benchmarks, and see what happens. The whole process.
Okay. But if it's to be a completely formal thing, I need to figure out some of the clustering techniques on the outputs. Some formal clustering technique.
I mean, there are many well-known clustering algorithms, and I think you should just pick one or two standard ones and see how well they perform. And I feel that if you have different ranges, they would actually give you different clusters. One of the parameters I think these algorithms take is how many clusters to choose, which would be a little tricky because now you don't know how many different clusters exist in, let's say, the output of the application. But then I think even for those, there were some techniques that would figure out automatically how many to take based on when creating another cluster gives you more benefit or less benefit.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll try to find some references and send you.
Okay, sure.
I think one classroom method that's on top of my head is called subtractive classroom.
Subtractive.
You don't have to specify the number of clusters, but you do need to specify the radius. You see the radius of the cluster.
Okay.
With that single parameter, you can automatically create the cluster centers for you, and without specifying number of clusters.
Okay. I was thinking that all these clustering techniques would classify, would break the outputs into several regions, but how those outputs will be mapped to the input. If the input is not well defined. If the behavior is not very defined, then we can have a problem.
Go ahead, Ajay.
I was just saying that once you break the output into different clusters, then you know that any output that comes into a particular cluster, you do the submodeling within the cluster. So now if you have four clusters, you would have four submodels.
Right. Yeah, one suggestion I was going to make is to when you have the clusters, right, if we assume that adding more resources will never reduce performance, right, then you can take the maximum output value in each cluster and use the corresponding input parameter value to choose the breakpoint of the input space.
Okay.
Because for each output parameter, so you have a point, you have a set of points where you have input parameters and output value.
Mm-hmm.
So you know the division of the output values, and within each division you take the maximum output value and look at the corresponding input parameter value to derive, you know, and set that as the boundary.
Okay.
So you could do something like that.
Yeah, I think ideally we want this to be automated. We cannot leave it that somebody has to pick the boundaries or clusters or anything, because then that defeats the whole purpose of trying to automate these things.
Okay, so that's something for you to follow up on. Now, it seems like the sub-modeling and multi-resolution modeling actually helped, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they didn't help as much in some cases, but
in Ruby's, yes, of course.
And maybe data analysis would be useful, that okay, what depending on the cluster size, depending on the cluster radius, how that impacts the difference of the performance.
Right. Maybe in some cases you don't really need to create some models.
Yeah,
the single model is good enough, right? So we want to come up with criteria that will tell us that.
Yeah, where you need the sub modeling, how do you decide whether to go for the sub modeling?
So one criteria would be that if you see a concentration of errors in a specific region, then
more formalizing that is part of the cluster.
Okay. So you are saying that cluster, even the error points also for the corresponding
clustering is not the error point, but cluster. If a zone has a lot of input points, grouped together, then do you need some model for that, or if it is a larger zone, the cluster is like that, then you need some modeling. My sense is that if it is concentrated on a focused area, then probably you don't need some modeling.
You mean if the errors are concentrated in a small area, or
no, outputs?
Outputs.
You mean the okay? So if the output values are concentrated in a small area, is all in a single cluster?
So it's all in a single cluster. Now how that output differ? How the output ranges within that input range? Really. That may drive whether you need the sub modeling or not.
Yeah, maybe the number of clusters in the output parameter values may decide whether we need sub models or not. If it's a single cluster, then it's very well behaved, then we probably don't need sub models, or maybe sub models won't help.
It's just me. You should see the errors, because imagine you have a linear model. Even though the output is really condensed in a small range, but it's still a linear model, then there's no need for some modeling. I don't think clustering based on the output space is gonna directly relate to where we should partition the space.
Probably you're right. Maybe, you probably need to be more on the basis of
the errors.
Errors.
Yeah, you should be looking at the region that has high errors, but also is a small error in this space.
Mm-hmm.
It's within cluster, but has much higher errors than the other clusters.
Then probably need some modeling on that.
Yes.
That's specifically applied on the Ruby. Maybe if they do formalizing things, they will automatically figure out.
So you can still
maybe if you draw it like this. You have just one input parameter, and you have error. And some errors are like that, and some errors are like that, some errors are like that. So you don't need probably clustering here.
Don't need a sub model.
You don't put on the sub model. You need sub modeling here, you need sub modeling here. So okay. It's not really formalized, but intuitively that's the. That's what is being talking about, probably.
Mm.
You need some modeling on those specific?
On those areas where you have the high error point. Now, the point you're trying to say is, okay, do you see any pattern by applying the clustering on the outputs, you can try to find out whether there is any pattern of high error. If there is any pattern on the high error, then you can focus the sub modeling on those regions.
Those regions of high error.
On those regions of high error.
So basically, do clustering. You do clustering based on distance in the output space.
Mm-hmm.
But then you do some model for the cluster that have much higher error than the other clusters. You can verify this by just looking at the Ruby data.
Yeah. Actually, I did the similar effort, but not in a formal way for the Ruby.
So, can you walk us through what you did informally? for us to get a better understanding?
So for rubies, I did the specific thing. So I found out that on the lower region, if you take about the input as a parameter, the lower region there, it has a higher concentration of errors.
You mean the lower regions of the input space or output space?
Well, it's a vice versa relationship. So lower input corresponds to lower output.
Okay.
So that
lower input and lower output.
Lower output, and I only focused on that. I did a submodel on that particular region. But the other areas, there is no specific trend of concentration of errors. So that's why I figured out, okay, there is a zone I can find their concentration of errors. I did a submodeling on that part.
Mm-hmm. Because I think what you choose as the axis would affect the clusters.
Yes.
So if you choose the output parameter as the x-axis, let's say, and error as the y-axis, then your points will be clustered differently than if you choose your input parameter
mm-hmm.
as x-axis.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it would be interesting to look at which ones...
Or there might not be difference.
Or there may be no difference. But I'm saying that there could be a difference.
There could be difference, but in Ruby, it has a good relation. That specific one input has a corresponds with...
But it's not a deviant, it's an evenly distributed one. But the input is evenly distributed, right? Is it? Or I'm wrong. How did you pick your training diagram?
Input is evenly distributed.
Right. The input is evenly distributed. Mm-hmm. If you do clustering, it's just evenly distributed clusters.
Mm-hmm.
But the output may not be evenly.
I think it should be input versus error, because it's by clustering on the output, you do not know in what situation the application was.
Mm-hmm.
Because input defines the situation.
Okay.
That's a good point. Because a particular output may be in various input points. Really.
Yes.
So a particular output, you say, okay, but for this output, my error is high, I need to do the submodeling. But on which you will do the submodeling on the input parameter. So you don't have any, there is no point to map from the output to the input, because it maps to the multiple input. Really.
So, but on the other hand, taking Ruby as an example, You can see that by model nature, because when the working size is smaller than the memory size, it's much worse performance than
mm-hmm.
high I/O, right? But once the working size fits in the memory, then everything just works perfect.
Works perfect. Yeah.
So you can only see that from the output, not the input.
But you're saying the high memory and low memory.
But even though the error and input correspond, if I just plot an input versus error.
But if you take the input, you use the input to do clustering, then you wouldn't really, because in the output you see a sharp jump from no memory to high memory, right? That's
you're talking about the error, is the sharp jump on the output.
That's the output.
Application performance.
Performance.
Yeah, I'm not talking about just the input clustering, I'm talking about the input and error.
And error.
Clusters.
But the error value should correspond, because in Ruby I found that when the input is lower, output is lower as well, as you said, but errors are also correspond.
But then when you do clustering, are you using only the input or just also the error?
Also the error.
Also the error, so you're using two-dimensional space for clustering.
Yeah. Multi-dimensional clustering.
Then that means the cluster you create for the input only, okay, it may not be consecutive or sequential, right? May not be the same region. The model, so here's the thing. So you create the model, how you use the model. Can you read this?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's our previous thing.
Okay, so yeah, talking about this, so this use the input.
So Ajay, if you want to see what Ming is drawing on the board, I can turn on the Skype video. Ajay, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't know if you have access to Skype, but if you do, then I can turn on Skype video for you.
Actually, Skype I have on my phone, but on my computer I don't have it.
Okay, that's fine.
It's fine.
Okay,
I'll try to follow up.
So for Ruby, it's like this, right? The input for output model, like this, right? For some parameters, not all.
For
some
parameters, yes. For the ones that are interesting. For
the
ones
that is interesting, the memory, yes.
So my concern is, if we only take input for clustering, then you would create a cluster, maybe a cluster here, a cluster here, a cluster there, right? So then this this class does not make sense because this is where the transition happens. But if we look at the output, we would create a cluster here and a cluster here. That seems to me makes more sense. And because this is two different models that happen in this
But thing is that when you ask them, because from a modeling, what the model does is that model takes the inputs and predicts the output.
Right.
So when you do some model, yeah. So the model doesn't know what to pick up, because you actually, I mean, you ask a query, given an input set, you ask a query, okay, what will be my predicted output? But at that point, the query engine doesn't know where
so you are doing training, so you have both the input and output. You have both, right?
I have both, but if you do clustering on the output, so when I ask a query, it doesn't know the output or what the output is.
No, but once you load in this region to create some model, you can get it back, right? In the reverse of the output, you can get where the input is at, right? So basically, this output you know.
But in this case, you are basically assuming that if there is a step in the output, then the neural network cannot predict it.
Yeah, basically using Ruby as an example for this, yes.
But that may not be the case.
It may not be the case for the other application.
So I was thinking, okay, more from the error perspective, okay, where the error is high, and focused on those errors by creating a sub-model.
Yeah, I know, but then the cluster that you use has to be in the same region on the input space.
That's what the cluster will do.
So you have to do clustering based on the input only. And but pick the cluster based on the error.
See, always, I mean, in this sort of a two-tier, yeah, I mean, clustering is not my forte, but in this kind of a two-dimensional chart, when you do clustering, don't you look at two-dimensional clustering?
No, I'm talking about one-dimensional clustering.
One-dimensional?
Yeah, I don't think two-dimensional clustering would work. Because if you take a two-dimensional cluster, well, if you use input and output, it may work. But if you use input and error, then how do you use the cluster?
As the error, not the input. The criteria.
The problem is if you do a one-dimensional clustering on the error, then all the points in a single cluster may not be in a contiguous input. I was not thinking of on the one-dimensional clustering. I was thinking from a multi-dimensional clustering. Can you do a clustering on the input and error on the multi-dimensional
clustering? Still you would have a problem. The cluster that you create based on the two dimensions using error and the input may not be in a contiguous region on the input. Right?
But that's what the clustering will find out. If you think about a multi-dimensional space,
okay.
This is the error, and this is the input. Then if I have a cluster here, then these values are within the same range.
Question, how do you use it then? Because once you have the model, so when you do prediction, you only have input, you don't have error. So how do you use it?
You run the model.
You first create a single model.
Plots the error and the input.
Right.
Do a multi-dimensional clustering.
Okay.
Identify the cluster that has the very high error points, and then focus on those clusters to do the submodel.
That's for training or for testing.
That's for training.
That's what I mean. Yeah, when you do testing, you only have the input.
When I have the input, I know that whether the input is within the cluster range or within the submodel range or within the global model range.
Yes, but there may be several submodels that overlap on the input. They may overlap on the input, right?
No.
Because you do two-dimensional clustering.
Right.
They may overlap. So if you have three clusters, they overlap on the input.
Okay.
You cannot use two dimensions, you can only use one dimension. Clustering.
But can we pose some additional constraints to say that the clusters cannot overlap along with some dimension?
Yeah, that's possible, but I don't think that's intuitive. Mm-hmm. It makes sense. Yeah.
But the one dimensional cluster, how do you make it with a contiguous? point. Even on the output, you cannot.
No.
If you do the output,
you cannot make it.
One idea I have that in Ruby specifically, I found that they are so concentrated in a region. So what I can do is that first do that. Okay, if I can find a finer boundary, I mean a uniform error distribution. If I don't find an error distribution, then I can think about doing some subspacing of the input range, then doing clustering. If a regular clustering doesn't find a uniform distribution, then we can go directly towards some just simple sub-region dividing. For example, in case of file mint, there is no particular error distribution. Error distributions are all over the place. So just I did, that's why I did simple subdividing of the input space.
Yeah, maybe you can try use both input and output for graphing. So the input has to stay close to stay close enough to each other, and the output should also stay close enough to each other. Maybe that works.
Well, how about if we use ensembling? Let's say the clusters overlap on the input domain, then we could possibly use ensembling across all the nodes. Because what that's telling me is that maybe both models are relevant to some extent.
Can you really overlap? Because what you're saying is the overlap basically means that okay, so for this input this is the error, for this input this is the error, and for this input this is the error.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're basically saying okay, this is a cluster, and maybe this is another, this is a cluster.
I mean, I think what thing is
because for the same input, the error will be same.
Or we could just check the class that has the noise, the error, and we could test it, right?
Like, so if I have, say, four input points and I have something like this, right? So the clustering will be this, and there is your overlap.
And we could just use the lower cluster which produces the lowest error. Then make that back.
You mean create a model using this?
No, once we have the proof sum models, when we use the sum models for testing, when we have an input that is in the overlapped region between two sum models, we use the sum model that gives us lowest error during the training. That seems to be intuitive.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's possible.
So basically, the sum models may overlap.
It's similar, but it's okay, right? Because we want the sum model to give us the highest accuracy.
So who shall we have give the lower accuracy?
We know, right? Because we know these two sum models, right? So if we have the input that is here, so we know this sum model has lower error than that the other one, right? So it just makes sense to use this one after the other one.
I think that is to be like
try.
Yeah, so Sajid, maybe you can try some of these alternatives.
Try some of this clustering and see whether.
Yeah, because at this point we're just doing speculation, right? And it's not clear to me which one would work the best.
Do you have any software to use to do the clustering? Is it easy or do you? R is one. If you're conversing with R.
Yeah, take a look.
And if you more want to go for the Microsoft, then if you put all the data into the SQL Server, then on the top of Excel by using SQL Server, you can also do all the clustering. That's another way. These are the two ways I know.
So SQL support is.
Yeah, if you have a SQL Server, all this written in SQL Server. And you can connect to the, you can have Excel on top of that, and Excel has a data mining model.
You can
connect to the SQL Server database, and it gives you a nice interface to do all the data modeling.
It's from Excel.
Another one you can look at is that's little bit easy one. So I'm not sure how exhaustive that is Tableau, TABLAU.
Yeah. But that Tableau is a $50,000 software.
No, that's a fee. That is a fee of open source software.
Really?
Yeah. We use that. I have used that before.
Hmm.
And I've just spent $50,000. I know that.
Or maybe I'm thinking about something else.
No, it has a version that is full.
I see.
Really. But I think for academic courses there is an academic version to it.
I see.
Is that a mathematics tool box?
Huh?
What kind of software is that?
It's a data mining tool.
Data mining tool.
It's a data mining tool.
Yeah.
It's a very nice.
That
it doesn't have exhaustive. It's not that exhaustive like R, but it's a good like to do easy, quick kind of thing. Just to play with it is easy to play with it.
I think the best option would be R to support customers.
R is the best option.
Yeah.
If you have lot of choices. So if you have already, I believe you have already installed R and you have used R. So I will say stick with R in that case because it's a very powerful one.
We need to integrate with your program.
Yeah.
If R does not work, it's in MATLAB. MATLAB is easier.
MATLAB, I will use MATLAB.
I think so.
MATLAB.
We have MATLAB.
R is easy to use.
How would be the best?
Another software that we use here for these things is Sage, and there is an open source version, and you can install even a web server, and everybody can access it.
Oh,
what is the name of the software?
It's Sage, S-A-G-E, and it's basically an open source version of MATLAB, and it's pretty good. It has a web server with a very nice GUI. You can even do stuff and it does plotting for you right there on the web page itself.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Sage is a good tool to install in general.
Mm-hmm.
And you can give different logins to different people and then they can log in, they can create their own working environment, save their own queries or mathematical formulas, and it just stays there. So you have your own space on the software.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That sounds very useful.
So our department has MATLAB. Okay.
So you have a lot of choices on that software. Yeah. There is no shortage of choices on that.
I just need to find out how to use it to do what you wanted to do.
I say first try it out. That's more open source, the most powerful. You can like eat integration will be much easier.
Okay, so
Do the clustering and that will be easy to, because without the data, without the actual cluster, it will be difficult to see that, okay, what will be the impact.
So I'm also curious, Sajib, did you manage to collect data for any other benchmarks?
No.
Because that is one direction that we do have to explore.
Parallelly?
Yeah, and this is a parallel, this has to be a parallel thing,
mm-hmm.
because I know that data collection takes some time.
Have you finished the mission? Oh yes, I can.
Okay.
Just let me know when you need it.
Okay.
So I switched this and reboot it.
Right, so do you have any candidate application in mind to collect data for?
TPCC.
TPCC? Mm-hmm. Okay. And so with TPCC, how many do we have them?
Five.
Yeah, I feel that the more the better, because you know that will allow us to demonstrate, especially since we are going into the modeling domain,
mm-hmm.
right? And for SOSP, if we let's say end up with that, which is most likely the case, I think.
Feel I'm hoping the best. I mean, I'm thinking about sending the modeling to SOSP and sending the algorithm to SOSP.
That's good. So you know, if we are able to accomplish that, that's good. But my point right now is that we have resources that are lying
mm-hmm.
idle,
mm-hmm.
right? And this is one potential direction. So we should make sure that we don't run into a situation later on where we are really scrambling for our resources and time, right?
Okay.
Because right now our resources are lying idle.
Okay.
So let's make use of that and collect data. And it doesn't require you to spend a whole lot of time,
mm-hmm.
I'm assuming.
No.
The data get collected on this site.
Okay.
And I think if you go into the modeling direction, you know, if we have, let's say, 6 to 8, I mean, better 8 than 6,
different applications that do different things,
mm-hmm.
and if we are successful in creating models, I think you know, that would make a strong case.
Okay.
So TPCC, and then think about something else.
One extra file bench profile.
Another file bench profile. Okay.
And another, maybe I'm thinking that some, if we can, you are talking once that maybe some scientific application.
Okay. Right. So scientific applications. There are a few mini scientific applications that are open source. So send me an email and I'll point you to some of them.
Okay.
That sounds like a oxymoron. You say mini scientific application.
Well, they actually call it mini apps.
Oh, okay.
Because they are supposed to be not the full blown version, but they are sort of representative at some level.
Oh, okay. It's like mini supercomputer.
Yeah.
I think it's a strange notion to have.
The only thing is that for these scientific mini apps, ideally all these scientific applications are large scale, so they run on a whole bunch of nodes. And at this point, we are thinking about modeling the VM within a single node. So I don't see it as the most relevant class of applications, but we could put it in the mix if we don't have anything else.
Okay, let me also try to think of some applications which may be some enterprise app which we haven't modeled yet.
Right, I think the Sajid's only requirement or preference at this point is that the application should run on Linux.
Okay, I'll keep that as a constraint.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you already know how to install TPCC? TPCC, I found the software, it seems to be convenient. It's not like Ruby. If you have, you can also talk to Dishi.
Okay.
She has used it before. Oh, she has used TPCC also?
Yes.
Okay. TPCC, TPCH, some other TPCC. Ruby is TPCC, W. It's similar to TPCC. Okay.
There was also this video streaming thing. Did we ever discuss that?
DVD
store, but it's not a streaming video, it's something else.
It's an e-commerce store.
I see. Yeah, so yeah, I mean, I don't know if there are any video streaming server benchmarks.
It's a stream, I think.
And I've also seen, you know, you might want to look at some recent systems conferences and the benchmarks that they use.
I guess a lot of people use Hadoop these days. How hard is that to set up or use?
I think Hadoop is again the sort of the distributed kind of entity, but we could choose to.
So if you set it up using, let's say, 4 VMs or something, and then we say that we model all of them.
Create a single model across all these VMs. And that's interesting. That would be a new dimension for this modeling work.
Mm-hmm.
Because then we control allocations at a multi-VM granularity.
It doesn't have to be massive VM. We can start by just modeling a single micro or single reducer. That's also what you need. So you have thousands of micros, thousands of reducers. Each one of them is running a virtual machine. Right, then you need a model for everyone.
Right, I think the concern is that if you change allocations for one, it would affect the performance of the other guys also.
But the map reduce is not tightly coupled, it's not tightly synchronized. So the progress on one, well,
Well, one can be actually the if it lags behind, then everything lags behind in some sense.
If you think about from map to reduce, yes. If one mapper slows down, then nobody can move down to reduce space.
Mm-hmm.
But the inherent mechanism in map reduce is that if one is too slow, then you will just start another one.
Right. So what you're saying, in other words, is that controlling one doesn't help, because the infrastructure itself will auto adjust and respond to that.
I think that's more like a problem on the global level, the second layer, how you optimize the global resource distribution so that the overall progress is maximized.
I think it's more, I think it would probably be more convenient to look at this problem as a multi-VM problem than a single VM problem, because of the reasons that we just discussed.
But it still needs to start from a single VM model.
Right.
Given this amount of work that I give to this mapper, how much resources it needs, and how soon it can finish its task. And given all the mappers that I have, how do we allocate the resources so that they can finish at the same time?
Right. No, I do understand that we have to model individual mappers.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm saying is that we might have to model all the mappers at the same time, not mappers independently.
I think another problem is, what if a machine is mapper for some time and after that it's a reducer? Are these entities static for machines? I would assume that machines would be selected as a mapper or reducer as more and more jobs arrive, and it's not a static mapping.
I don't know much about how production Hadoop does these things, does the mapping of mappers and reducers, but it's very possible what you're describing, that the reducer becomes a mapper after a while or at the same time. And I think Hadoop in general is quite complex, and if we get into that, I'm afraid that we'll run into some major roadblocks and we'll have to turn back.
Okay. I guess I agree. I think it's not the right time to explore it.
Okay, so let's think about other applications. See where we can. So Sajeev, how can we help you?
At this moment, let's see whether I get some clustering data.
I think at some point when we are relatively confident that this whole submodeling direction makes sense, we have to start writing it up.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So we'll let you take the call and when's the right time for that.
Okay.
And just send us an email in case you start feeling confident that these things can be automated and this is actually a good direction. Then we should start writing it up. Okay. And also, I think we discussed that there was one section which perhaps you wanted to complete the USENIX draft, and then we go through each.
I think it's the experiment section.
Right. So.
And there are some reminders in the section 4, which is about the NN. You need to probably fix those in Word.
Okay. So are those reminders for us or for you?
For me.
Okay. So if you fix those, then maybe you can pass it back to us and then we can do a revision.
Okay.
So just to keep the writing going at the same time, because now is a time where you are doing everything and we are not really doing much. But there may be some free cycles amongst us also which can be used up.
Okay.
Right. So think about that too.
Okay.
Yeah. How to keep us a little more busy. All right.
Okay.
I think we are sort of done for today, unless there is some other issue that someone wants to discuss. Okay. Then we'll meet same time next week, and Sajeev will update us in the meanwhile on any progress that he makes.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Guys.
Bye.
Bye.